Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 20th day of April, 2024. And actually, in this case, the day after an anniversary, I want to make sure we don't miss the real Patriots Day. I'm your host, Mark Call. Yep, 419, arguably one of the most important dates in American history for a number of reasons, some of them wonderful, some of them downright tyrannical and evil, but all of them ever so closely associated with the continuing battle between good and evil and liberty and tyranny. First, April the 19th, 1775, was the date of the shot heard round the world at Lexington and Concord Green after the evil King George, and he looks better and better, doesn't he, compared to the face-diapered senile imposter playing his role today, tried, albeit unsuccessfully, and in the same fashion we're also seeing today, to disarm the colonists of their powder and ball. But just over two centuries later, on the exact same date in 1993, the traitorous Clinton regime, under Janet Reno, the butcher of Waco, executed six dozen or so men, women, and children at their Sabbath-keeping church in Waco, Texas. And then 2 years to the very day later, they blew up the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City in order to cover up those crimes, destroy evidence, and kill a whole bunch of kids in the basement in the process, after making sure that all the three-letter agencies, especially the ATF, knew what was coming and got the heck out of there. And then, here's some irony for you, they used their false flag to pass the bogus Anti-Terror Act, kind of a lead-up to the Patriot Act, accomplishing more of the very same gang rape of the Constitution and Bill of Rights. Which brings me directly to today's news and the continuing battle against ever greater tyranny and to overthrow everything that 200 years of American patriots fought and died for. Earlier in the week, we had what's been called the Uniparty Reveal, where the traitor masquerading as Speaker for the House, Mike Johnson, broke a tie among various rhinos and outright communists in the House to pass, essentially, yet another gang rape of the Fourth Amendment. This time, they pulled out the stops. We'll come back to that. But now, when it comes to treason writ large, I guess if we needed any more proof, folks, it's in. The traitors in the swamp will allow and encourage the persecution and prosecution of a real president with no actual charges, no actual evidence, and no actual crime. But when it comes to an oath-breaking traitor openly encouraging, aiding, and abetting the invasion of the United States, treason is not only no longer a crime, they aren't even going to be bothered to hold a trial to discuss the issue. Because let's face it, they have just given an open middle finger to the entire United States and said, come on, don't you get it? He's doing the job we want. The story goes like this, although for the most part, the Waystream kind of pretty much ignored it. Cullen Linebarger, though, for the Gateway Pundit, writes that as the WAPO reported, there was supposed to be a trial on those articles of impeachment beginning at 1 p.m. Eastern Time Wednesday before the Senate, as was required back when we still had a Constitution. But the so-called Senate Majority Leader, Chucky Schumer, traitor from New York, urged the other traitors to vote to dismiss both articles of impeachment without even going through the pretense, because I guess even the pretense would have made it pretty blankety-blank and obvious that this guy was as guilty as hell of aiding and abetting an invasion, and, yep, that's about as close to the constitutional definition of treason as you can get. By, quote, levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, you know, the kind that have already come across the southern border by the millions upon millions, giving them aid and comfort. Do you think free phones, free housing, free debit cards, and free bus and airplane tickets might qualify there? Well, so do they, which is why they're not about to let you see that on TV. And here's the rest of the absolutely disgusting story. Democrats voted along party lines on the first article of impeachment, which charged Mayorkas with, quote, willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law, unquote, finding that charge was, well, unconstitutional. Why? Because we don't have no f***ing constitution anymore, folks. Get used to it. Whereupon they promptly dismissed the second charge with another wave of the middle finger, which charged Mayorkas with a, quote, breach of public trust. I know, what public trust? And that too is unconstitutional, and I guess the reason should be obvious, because the public should know better by now that when any one of these traitors puts their hand on a Bible and swears before a God they don't believe in that they're going to preserve and protect a constitution that the whole stinking Senate doesn't believe in, they're lying through their teeth. And you ought to know it by now. What are you, stupid or something? That's why they're not even going to bother with the pretense of following the Constitution anymore by holding even a fake trial and simply declare that it's unconstitutional to hold them to account. Which tells you a whole lot about what you should expect coming up in November, right? Do you still think that these same people are going to care what the hell you vote for? And I guess just to put this in perspective and give your host a chance to cool off a bit, let's recap the history of these things. As any number of people have by now noted, this rubber stamp of treason by a traitorous Senate upset 227 years of congressional history. And only once ever in this country's history has an impeachment trial not been held when an individual had been impeached by the House of Representatives, and that was because the individual there at least had enough integrity to resign before the Senate had to hold the trial. And prior to this last constitutionally destructive debacle, last week, 43 Republican senators signed a letter to the walking-talking Chucky doll highlighting the upper chamber's constitutional duty that, quote, requires the Senate to hold a trial. Since 1797, they wrote, 21 individuals have been impeached by the House of Representatives. Trials were held in every single instance, except obviously that one where it was no longer necessary. And never before has the Senate abandoned their duty, even when certain members may have believed, as for example in the double impeachment of the actually duly elected president last time around, that the basis for that impeachment was tenuous at best. What do we see here? That the United States Senate is no longer even as trustworthy as a crooked New York court. Let's follow that up with this and a warning to the wise, because you know who works for these same traitors, don't you? Yeah, among others, the Department of Justice and the FBI. Who's also traitorous director? Chris Wray revealed, as if we didn't already know it, that China, can you imagine such a thing? And some of us would say, come on, who are you kidding? They've had it in place for a while, but now that the FBI is admitting it, you know they're almost ready to drop the hammer.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
They're developing, they said, the capability to cause significant damage to American critical infrastructure at a time of their choosing. And the only question, they said, is when to launch the catastrophic blow. Quote, China is developing the ability to physically wreak havoc on our critical infrastructure at a time of its choosing, said Wray, at the 2024 Vanderbilt Summit on Modern Conflict and Emerging Threats. Its plan, he said, is to land low blows, and hey, we saw one in the Senate, didn't we, against civilian infrastructure this time to try to induce panic. Unquote. And of course, the job of the FBI is to grease the skids and make sure that when they do exactly what we all know they're gonna do, and Mayorkas and the Senate are more than happy to allow, they can be rip-roaring ready to make sure that panic has the desired effect. But there's more. According to Wray, an ongoing Chinese hacking campaign known as Volt Typhoon has successfully infiltrated a number of American companies in telecommunications, energy, water, and other critical sectors, as well as 23 pipeline operators that are also being targeted. Chinese hackers, said Wray, operate a series of botnets, which are constellations of compromised personal computers and servers around the globe to hide their nefarious cyber actions. Of course, it helps if you own the White House and the Congress. And notes TGP, some might argue, that would include your host, that the ongoing operation is, guess what, already underway, because early this morning there was yet another beta test, this time involving a widespread outage of 911 emergency numbers in four different states, Nebraska, South Dakota, Nevada, and Texas. And how many times, folks, have we seen tests like this over the last, well, especially year? But there's more. Investigative journalist Laura Logan revealed that reliable intelligence sources have told her, and we've reported on it here, that the Francis Scott Key bridge collapse in Baltimore, Maryland last month was, quote, an absolutely brilliant strategic attack on U.S. critical infrastructure. And guess what, folks? With the traitors able to get away with it with impunity, you can bet your, well, life, liberty, and property there will be more. You already know, of course, that the United States military can't be bothered with actually defending the United States, and arguably they can't even be bothered with learning what defending the United States is even about, because we have all the DEI and LGBTQ++ and other bullshit that they're being trained to believe is far more important than the job that they were actually, at least once upon a time, signed up to risk their lives to do anyway. So, this week, and the video is up online, the Secretary of the Air Force, Frank Kendall, admitted during questioning by Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida before Congress that less than one-third of the U.S. Air Force F-35 fighter jets manufactured by Lockheed Martin are actually, at present, operationally capable, which is exactly why the traitors are trying to push World War III. Doesn't that make perfect sense? given the figure by another Air Force general on the F-35 program that no more than 29% of the F-35 fleet was operationally capable, the Air Force secretary said he wouldn't dispute that figure. And wrote Representative Matt Gaetz afterwards on X, the Pentagon has given too much power to the defense contractors that are bilking American taxpayers, he said. Well, why wouldn't they, folks? The Congress sure as hell isn't going to hold them accountable. This next story is one that I've touched on over the last week, but I think it's really important to go into a bit more detail. And I promised up front we'd get back to it anyway. I'll start with a brief intro from former Assistant Treasury Secretary Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, who said, as he predicted back in early April, the police state got the Republicans to reconsider and pass their warrantless spying and home entries and you don't have no stinking Fourth Amendment gang rape of the Constitution again, and the Republican Speaker of the House, scumbag Mike Johnson, cast the deciding vote that nixed any requirements to actually have what was once quaintly called a warrant, which, notes Dr. Roberts, tells us all we need to know about rhinos, or Republicans. They're a big part of the problem. And what he calls super patriots, I will call them pseudo-patriotic idiots, will say, we have to do this to protect ourselves from terrorists. What, you mean the terrorists that occupy the House of Communists, the White House, and much of the Supreme Court? Or the ones that are streaming across the non-existent southern border, literally by the millions, unopposed? Huh?
Morons. I've got morons on my team.
These so-called patriots don't understand that if you don't have a constitution, folks, you don't have any protection. And by the way, included in that is the Second Amendment and the First Amendment with the rights to freedom of speech, assembly, and of course, to keep and bear arms, which they don't want you to have because they don't want you to live. And Dr. Roberts goes on to note that Ed Snowden, and we've talked about that part as well, have reported the situation is far more serious than even he thought, because a big part of the FISA Act is a section, Section 702, being enlarged to require every company and person that provides any Internet-related service, and guess what, folks, that's just about everything, to assist in gang-raping the Bill of Rights whenever the NSA comes calling. Which takes us to a piece by John W. Whitehead, entitled, in part, Warrantless Surveillance Makes a Mockery of the Constitution. And he begins by quoting George Orwell about Big Brother, and notes that Big Brother long ago sold us out to the highest bidder, which turns out to be the deep state variant thereof. But what's playing out now with the highly politicized tug of war over whether Section 702 of the misnamed Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which actually spies on everything, not just foreigners, because they call you foreign to their fake government, but whether or not it gets reauthorized by Congress, it doesn't just sell us out. It makes us literal slaves of the deep state. And note, he says, if you read the fine print, it really is a doozy. Because just as the misnamed USA Patriot Act was perverted from its stated alleged intent to fight terrorism abroad and instead used to covertly crack down on the American people, allowing Big Brother's three-letter agencies to secretly track Americans' financial activities, monitor their communications, and carry out wide-ranging surveillance of just about every kind on them, Section 702 has been used for a long time as an end run around the Constitution to allow Big Brother to collect the actual content of your conversations, whether they're phone calls, text messages, video chats, emails, or basically anything electronic, and we don't need no stinking warrant. Now, he notes, intelligence officials, SIC, are pushing to dramatically expand Big Brother's spying powers, effectively giving the government unbridled authority to force millions of Americans to spy on its behalf and even on themselves. Basically, Big Brother's deep state wants to turn the American people into extensions of Big Brother. Remember, Big Brother is watching you and listening. And as Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, explains, if you have access to any communications, the government can force you to help it spy. That means anyone with access to a server, a wire, a cable box, a Wi-Fi router, a phone, or a computer. So think for a moment, he says, about the millions of Americans working in buildings and offices in which communications are either stored or simply passed through. And this next part is particularly interesting, and yes, unnerving. After all, continues Senator Wyden, every office building in America has data cables running through it. The people are not just the engineers who install, maintain, or repair our communications infrastructure. There are countless others who could be forced to help the government spy, including those who clean offices and guard buildings. If this provision is enacted, and Big Brother intends to, the government, SIC, or what now passes for it, folks, can deputize any of these people against their will and force them, in effect, to become what amounts to an agent for Big Brother, kind of like the Stasi did in East Germany. For example, by forcing an employee to insert manually a thumb drive into a server at an office that they clean or guard at night. All of this could happen without any oversight whatsoever. The FISA court won't know about it. Congress won't know about it. And remember, folks, they lie to the FISA courts anyway, so does it really matter? Americans who are handed these directives, he says, will be forbidden from talking about it unless they can afford high-priced lawyers with security clearances who know their way around the, well, folks, anti-constitutional FISA court to begin with, in which case they're probably not exactly on your team if you think about it. They will have no recourse at all, unquote. Some of us saw this coming, but as Whitehead notes, it's amazing how quickly Section 702 has been steamrolled into an expansion of Big Brother's already massive surveillance powers. Remember, Big Brother doesn't like to be restricted by the chains of the Constitution in any way. And what Americans don't get, most of them anyway, is that even without Section 702 in play, Big Brother will still target the populace for warrantless, suspicionless mass surveillance because that's how the police state maintains its stranglehold on power. And all of these maneuvers are just the tip of the iceberg because, for all intents and purposes, we now have a fourth, or maybe some would say fifth, branch of government. The fourth branch came into existence without any electoral mandate, much less constitutional referendum, yet it possesses superpowers above and beyond those of any other government agency, save maybe the military, and maybe there's no difference. It's all-knowing, all-seeing, and all-powerful, and it operates beyond the reach of even fake presidents, Congress, the courts, and it marches in lockstep with the corporate elite who are really calling the shots in the D.C. swamp. And this techno-tyranny surveillance apparatus has become so entrenched and entangled with the police state apparatus that it's hard to know anymore where law enforcement ends and surveillance begins. They are now one and the same. And on any given day, the average American, he notes, is now monitored, surveilled, spied on, and tracked in more than 20 different ways by both Big Brother and its public-private partner, Eyes and Ears. So be aware of what you say, what you read, what you write, where you go, with whom you communicate, and whether or not your phone is even close to somebody else's phone, or whether or not you're in a place with just about anything electronic, because it's all being recorded, stored, and ultimately will be used against you. We don't have courts of law anymore, but it'll be used in one of those star chambers at a time and place of Big Brother's choosing. Privacy, as you've thought you known it, has been dead for a long time, but now it's deader than a doornail with a wooden stake through the heart. And next, folks, he goes through a list, but you know it. Bottom line, Big Brother is watching you and listening to you and tracking you and predicting your moves to check out their AI prowess. Just about every branch of government, he continues, from the Postal Service to the Treasury Department and every TLA in between now has its own surveillance sector authorized, whether it's constitutional or not, and it's not, to collect data and spy on the American people. There are fusion and counterterrorism centers that gather all of the data from these smaller government spies, police, public health officials, transportation, etc., and make all of them accessible to those with the keys to the kingdom to maintain and control you and consolidate their power. These government snoops, he notes, are constantly combing through and harvesting vast quantities of our communications, our actions, literally everything, storing them in massive databases for years, and once this information, which is collected illegally and without probable cause, much less one of those stinking warrant things, is ingested into NSA servers, other Big Brother agencies, if they have the right connections anyway, can search through the databases to make criminal cases against the American people that have nothing to do with terrorism or even the pretense of a national security-related threat. Remember, folks, national security is another word for what was once called your constitutionally protected, God-given rights and freedoms. And as we've seen with Donald Trump, and as he points out correctly, you're next, it doesn't even remotely have to be what was once even called a crime. They just make stuff up, and I'm trying to be kind, and declare it to be whatever they declare it to be. The courts, as we've also seen, will rubber stamp it, and then the only question is, can we sell this crap to the public? Well, they're going to get conditioned to it, besides which, the AIs will help it be ever more palatable, as you've already seen, too. As Whitehead notes, talk about a system rife for abuse. No, folks, it's been tailored, engineered, and constructed explicitly for abuse. And now Big Brother wants us to believe, and you're a fool if you even entertain the notion, that we have nothing to fear from their mass spying programs because they're only trying to get the bad guys who are overseas. And you have to be an idiot to believe that statement, because the bad guys are coming in by the millions across the open southern border. Yeah, says Whitehead, don't believe it. Big Brother's definition of a bad guy is extraordinarily broad, except it's not broad enough to include the real bad guys who are running the system. And as he notes, what it means is Big Brother government has become the biggest lawbreaker of all. And it's telling, says Whitehead, that even after the revelation that the FBI, one of the most power-hungry and corrupt agencies in all of Big Brother's vast police state complex of power-hungry and corrupt agencies, misused the massive government surveillance program more than, you ready, 300,000 times in order to target American citizens, and we're still debating whether or not they should be allowed to continue to sidestep the Fourth Amendment. No, we're not debating it at all. We're being force-fed the crap. This is how our rights are routinely overruled and trampled underfoot. It works the same way every time. First, Big Brother, he says the government, but I'm going to use the proper term, seeks out extraordinary powers acquired in the wake of some contrived national crisis. In this case, warrantless surveillance powers intended to help the Big Brother spy on foreign targets suspected of engaging in terrorism. Remember, the real terrorists are going to get protection. And then they use those powers against the American people. According to FISA and the so-called court that oversees it, the FBI repeatedly misused Section 702 in order to spy on the communications of two vastly disparate groups of Americans, those involved in the George Floyd protests and those who may have taken part in the January 6th First Amendment protest to try to petition the government to address some grievances. Like a rigged election, they called it an insurrection, i.e. the Fedsurrection at the Capitol. According to the Brennan Center for Justice, he notes, Big Brother and his intelligence agencies conduct roughly 200,000 of these warrantless backdoor searches through Americans' private communications each and every year. No one is spared. Many of the targets have done nothing wrong whatsoever, and government minions have spied on the communications of protesters, members of Congress, crime victims, journalists, political donors, among many others. And they do spy on leftists too, folks, because how better to keep them under control than to blackmail them, as we have seen time and again. How else are they going to keep showers with the big guy, you know, daddy, out of the newspapers? And these liars may pretend that their spying on Americans is simply incidental, as though they didn't intend it. It was just an accident. Everyone knows that they're paying attention. They fully intend to collect and use this information. And according to the Wall Street Journal, it isn't limited to just eavesdropping of the kind you might expect. Quote, the Securities and Exchange Commission is deploying a massive government database called the CAT, or Consolidated Audit Trail, that monitors in real time the identity, transaction, and investment portfolio of everyone who thinks they are investing in things like the stock market. Journalist Leo Holman reports that Big Brother is also handing out $20 million in grants to police, mental health networks, universities, churches, and school districts to enlist their help in identifying Americans who just might be political dissidents or, potential extremists. And if you ask Big Brother, why are they doing this? Well, you get an answer right out of George Orwell and 1984. It's to keep America safe. But what it really is about, and Orwell had this right too, is control. We're dealing with a government, says Whitehead, approaching a conclusion here as if you couldn't already guess, that's so power-hungry, so paranoid, and so afraid of losing its stranglehold on power that it is literally waging war on anyone who dares to challenge their unconstitutional and increasingly unlimited authority. When the FBI is asking banks and other financial institutions to carry out dragnet searches of customer transactions warrantlessly and, of course, without probable cause because of indications of extremism. And here, folks, I'll pause just for a second because you know what they're talking about. We've already had the stories here. Maybe you bought a Bible with a credit card. Oh, no. Or worse still, you might have gone in and asked Big Brother's permission to buy a gun. And you know you're on the list then. You know it. We're all in trouble. And you don't even have to do anything illegal. Nor do you even have to challenge Big Brother's authority. You don't even have to care about politics or even think you know something about your rights or care about those either. All you really need to do in order to be tagged as a suspicious character, flagged for surveillance, and eventually placed on a Big Brother government watch list is to live in the United States. I.e., if you draw breath, you're suspicious. So, concludes Whitehead, as long as Big Brother is allowed to weaponize its 360-degree surveillance technologies to flag you as a threat to national security, especially if you haven't done anything wrong, it's simply a matter of time before you find yourself wrongly accused, investigated, that's a misnomer, isn't it, and then confronted by police based on a data-driven algorithm or risk assessment called together by a computer program run by artificial intelligence. Which takes us to the break. We'll be right back.
Another one bites the dust, and another one gone, and another one gone. Another one bites the dust, hey, hey, gonna get you too. Another one bites the dust.
I'm a patriot. Color me red, white, and blue. Fellow patriot.
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening's show. I am again your host, Mark Call, and it's been such an incredibly over-the-top week that it's honestly, folks, difficult to know exactly what of the multitude of stories that are shaping history this week I can squeeze into this second segment. We've talked about some of the treason. There's obviously a whole lot more, and a lot of it they don't intend for you ever to hear about anyway. Now that some headlines are saying Israel strikes back after the latest tit-for-tat in the continued escalation of World War III, but not quite as fast as some in the deep state would like it to be, I guess we can kick things off with some more recap on that score. As promised, and to absolutely no one's surprise, Iran finally retaliated against Israel for the strike on their sovereign embassy territory last week, launching a barrage of drones and missiles against military targets in Israel Saturday night. And here's where that infamous early casualty of war comes in, truth, because as to how much damage is done and how many missiles made it through, well, your guess is as good as what you're not going to hear told on most of the mainstream media. But hold that thought, we'll be back to it. Much of the knee-jerk press, for example, was saying as of Saturday evening that there were hundreds of missiles and drones launched and not a one of them made it through, thanks to the Iron Dome defenses and the U.S. military being nearby and helping out. In spite of what other sources, including Zero Hedge, say, is not true. Video evidence, says one of their headlines from Sunday, shows several Iranian cruise missiles scored direct hits, particularly on the Israeli military base at Nevatim. The Zero Hedge summary began by noting that both Israel and the U.S. have declared victory in defending against the massive Iranian drone and missile attack overnight, which reportedly saw over 300 projectiles, including drones, sent towards Israel. Ground anti-air systems were very active, including Iron Dome, David Sling, and the Arrow system, intended to thwart long-range missiles. And the skies over Israel were lit up for a number of hours, with explosions ringing out above various cities, especially Jerusalem. And U.S. systems were heavily engaged on behalf of Washington's closest ally in the Mideast. The IDF also subsequently said their Air Force fighter jets downed some 170 drones and 30 cruise missiles. A further statement claimed that, quote, all the drones and cruise missiles were downed outside the country's airspace by the IAF and its allies, including the U.S., U.K., Jordan, France, and others. But there are videos widely circulating on the web that say something very different. They appear to offer proof that at least some of Iran's ballistic missiles did find their way to targets on the ground, contradicting Israel's optimistic narrative of how almost all drones and missiles were intercepted. And the videos show a number of missiles scoring direct hits on at least two key Israeli military bases in the south part of the country, including Nevatim and Ramon Air Base. The question, folks, besides what is true, is what does all of this mean? And what's next? There were reports over the weekend that Israeli war councils were meeting not to decide whether or not to escalate, but how much and how drastically and how soon. And since it's now pretty obvious to most observers that World War III has long been in process, but it's in the process of accelerating, the popular bet as of Monday morning seems to be look for more and bigger war. However, as Zero Hedge notes, whether there'll be a big war or not is still yet to be seen based on Israel's response. The New York Times has reported that Prime Minister Netanyahu backed off early intent to launch an immediate military retaliation after a late-night phone call with the ventriloquist handling the Biden-Fuhrer marionette. And honestly, folks, that was a bit surprising, because it may be the only time that the puppet masters actually had the senile diaper wear not pushing for an escalation in the existing world war towards the nuclear option. because it certainly looks like, according to a number of analysts, that Iran literally pulled their punches. They struck only military targets. They evidently didn't even kill anyone, especially civilians. That, too, may have ended up being a lie. We'll come back to it in just a minute. They used essentially their low-end armaments, lots of relatively inexpensive drones, and then after exhausting a lot of the Iron Dome and other defenses, defending against just the first wave, and certainly probing their strengths along the way, and ultimately they didn't even use much, if any, of their best stuff. Says the Mideast Eye, also via Zero Hedge, and when it comes to the real issues and lessons learned, it cost Israel more than $1 billion to activate defense systems that intercepted Iran's massive drone and missile attack, according to a number of different sources, including, says this story, a former financial advisor to the Israeli military. Estimated Brigadier General Reem Aminoach, in an interview with Ynet News, the defense tonight was on the order of 4 to 5 billion shekels, or 1 to 1.3 billion bucks, per night, including munitions, manpower, equipment, and fuel costs. And the general highlighted that the staggering price tag for defense stands in stark contrast to the relatively low amount that Iran had to spend to launch its assault. And estimates put that at less than 10% of what it cost Israel to stop the attack. And while there was, late in the week, evidently a bit of a response by Israel striking back at Iran, explosions rocked an airbase in Isfahan, the city linked to Tehran's nuclear program, said the Daily Mail by Friday. But evidently, Iran and its state media downplayed that and didn't take the bait. So what's up? Your host can't help but think the answer may lie with more things the deep state just doesn't want you to know. Once the smoke settled for a few days after the Iranian retaliation against Israel, Hal Turner's radio show came up with some analysis about how the defense sector is panicking because of what they've learned, and they don't want you to. By now, he says, most of the world knows that Iran launched that multifaceted attack against Israel just a couple of days back, the fallout from which is now becoming frighteningly clear, and it has defense experts, sick, terrified. As the attack was in progress, Iran undertook what they called a very unusual and apparently foolish series of steps. They announced up front that they had launched their drones and then cruise missiles against Israel, and this despite the fact that the drones and missiles literally took forever to get to their targets. The drones were very slow. They took hours. The missiles still had 57 minutes more to travel before they reached their targets. So the so-called experts thought it was very strange and foolish that an attacker would give out such detailed information while the very weapons they had launched hadn't yet arrived, which gave Israel and its allies long time to go after those weapons, which they did. Well, it turns out this was neither strange nor foolish, say some of those, well, chastened experts at this point. It was evidently planned. And since we've been talking about that here, as have most other people, folks who weren't drinking the MSM Kool-Aid, we shouldn't be really surprised about that, even if the experts are shocked, I tell you. Because what happened? Iran had launched the old dregs of their arsenal. First-generation drones and first-generation cruise missiles. What they launched, in other words, was the junk that they'd had laying around for years. Slow-moving, loud junk. Iran wanted Israeli defenses to focus on that old junk and not on what they would fire next, ballistic missiles. Many of the drones even simply fell out of the sky from various malfunctions en route. Others were easily intercepted by fighter jets from Israel, the U.S., and the U.K., even some help from the French naval assets in the Mediterranean Sea while it lasted. There was a much-heralded 99% interception success rate broadcast around the world for all the gullible to hear, but it turns out there's a problem, a major problem, and that was Iran's ballistic missiles because a few of them got through, and almost no one noticed this problem because there hadn't been that much media coverage. Well, at least, says Hal Turner, until his piece. And then the hint came there was a big problem, as U.S. media reported the following. Quote, U.S. National Security Advisor, boy, that ought to scare the hell out of folks, Jake Sullivan stated today that the Department of Defense, SIC, alongside U.S. Central Command, is continuing to increase the readiness and integration of air defenses and early warning systems in the Middle East in order to erode the effectiveness, I thought it was virtually ineffective, of Iran's missile and drone capabilities, unquote. And when I read that, said Hal Turner, I thought to myself, who asked you? Why say something like that unless maybe there is a big problem. And when I started asking questions, he says, here's what I found. The missiles that hit the two bases in the Negev region didn't just get through. They did so against the most heavily defended area in the entire world, protected with the most advanced integrated ABM or anti-ballistic missile systems known to exist in the West. two Israeli bases in the Negev region, and one intelligence base in the far north of Israel on Mount Hermon got hit by Iranian missiles. In the north, the secret intelligence base of the occupied Golan Heights, located in Jabal al-Sheikh, or Mount Hermon, got hit and seriously damaged, while in the south, the Israeli Nevatim and Ramon bases got hit, and this is where the real problem seems to have reared its ugly head. According to secret intelligence information, the Nevatim air base in the Negev desert, hangar to Israel's F-35 stealth aircraft and Mossad spy aircraft, was the place where at least, and oh boy, we didn't hear this up front, did we? At least 44 Mossad personnel were killed. But for the defense sector, that seems to pale in comparison to what took place for Iran to be able to achieve that. And some of this, folks, we've heard, at least some of this, I hadn't. Nevatim was defended by the world's most advanced integrated ABM anti-missile defense shield, which incorporated the Arrow 2, David's Sling, THAAD, and Patriot 3 with the AN/TPY-2 X-band surveillance and targeting radar. And this system, it says, was designed to exclusively defend against the Iranian medium-range ballistic missile threat. And he provides some photos of the actual radar deployed to protect those bases. And yet, 5 to 7 missiles hit Nevatim. The Israelis have acknowledged that 2 runways and 3 warehouse structures were hit. No, it wasn't a knockout blow, but it wasn't intended as such. But still, he says any BDA or battle damage assessment expert would note that the point of impact was center mass. In other words, a clear indication of precision guidance. So, 5 to 7 missiles hit the world's most heavily defended location, defeating an integrated ABM defense that was custom built to defeat the very missiles that it ultimately failed to shoot down. That is what has some people in the defense sector literally panicked. Because, you see, if 5 to 7 missiles got through, then it's a given that others could get through. And even simple math, which we've been talking about earlier in the week, folks, shows that if Iran had fired, say, 30 missiles at the base, and they're talking about 10 or more times that, the base would simply no longer exist. And that's assuming they didn't even bother to use either nuclear weapons or hyperbaric weapons. The Iranians now know this. They know that Israel's missile defenses cannot stop their medium-range ballistic missiles with any great reliability. And that's not all. Jordan fired U.S. Patriot missiles to down a few Iranian missiles, but now Jordan's Patriots have been completely depleted. They simply have none left. And given what all this demonstrates, Israel is now not only vulnerable, but there is no filler technology that can be quickly inserted into the advanced integrated system to make things better over there. So they're factually defenseless from any large, and of course you know it, threatened salvos of these same missiles. Meaning, as Hal Turner puts it, that Iran has now achieved perhaps not only strategic deterrence of Israel, who not only knows that Iran will hit them, but that they can hit them at will with missiles Israel can't stop, but by extension, that applies to the U.S. now as well. Given that the little bear of Iran is arguably nothing compared to the big bear of Russia that the unelected deep state idiots in the swamp have been poking for years now, if there's any good news here, it might simply be that those Jonesing for the World War III, they've already kicked off to go completely nuclear. Perhaps, if they have half a brain, might sit back and say, maybe we better rethink this just a bit. I don't expect them to, but at least for the rest of us, a gauntlet has been thrown down. So just maybe, folks, what's been called this latest retaliatory strike by Israel on Iran, and it's been called feeble, might mean, and this would be a blessing, some sanity may have actually broken out once the message got delivered. And for now, at least, the escalation may be over. We can certainly pray about that. So with most of the World War III news on the table at this point, it's certainly fair to ask, what else is being ignored or deliberately obscured during all of the hoo-ha? And one obvious example comes from the criminal state of New York, which is out to destroy the man actually elected president, and the Alvin Bragg criminal trial. No, should be the trial of Alvin Bragg himself, but it's not. It's a criminal trial for Donald J. Trump. Allegedly, at least, the trial started Monday in New York City. We already know the trial is really over. What they're going to do is go through the circus and then make the announcement. And you know what the announcement is, too. Guilty, guilty, guilty. And if they had their way, it would be hanging by the neck until dead. But now, we'll just see if we can't put him in Rikers and let somebody else take care of that for us. Writes Martin Armstrong on places like the Burning Platform, as everyone is aware, Trump will receive nothing remotely resembling a fair trial, and Bragg, along with the criminally evil judge, will find Trump guilty, 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 and they'll cheer when they manage to get him killed by an inmate. They'll probably have removed the cameras from the cells long before, folks. And I feel sorry, says one of the world's foremost computer prognosticators of future events, for those who are blinded by their hatred of Trump. This is simply tearing down the country, and whatever they do to Trump has now opened the doors for rogue Republican prosecutors, when the time comes, to do the same thing to communist socialists masquerading as Democrats. This is, he notes, and I would say very correctly, the start of the American Civil War version 2.0. Ironically, the first one began April 12th, or so we're told, 1861. This one will be instigated April 15th, 2024. 163 years to at least the week, or in 19 waves, he notes, of 8.6 years, which is important to those that look at cycle theory. This week, the nation is entering uncharted territory, and on Monday, a former president will in fact be tried in what used to be called a court of law, but now is just a court of jokes, for the first time in American history. And bear in mind, folks, the Senate doubled down later in the week by ignoring Mayorkas' open treason. The elected president, as opposed to the puppet masquerading as such, is charged with 34 counts of falsifying business records to prevent news of his alleged extramarital affair from becoming public, which means from here on out, running for president in the once free United States, if you're not put there by the deep state, has become a serious personal risk. The gloves are off. There is no rule of law, certainly no national dignity that will remain standing. And before I continue with too much more of Armstrong's piece, I will note that the Gateway Pundit's coverage says far-left criminal judge Marchon on Monday morning rejected Trump's demand that he recuse himself because he's unfit to be a judge anyway, especially when it comes to personal bias and profit motive. Yeah, hardy har. It used to, folks, be called the appearance of impropriety as opposed to the stench that you just plain can't ignore. In particular, his daughter's political work, some, and that would include your host, might say pretty much outright bribery, because Lauren Marchon, the far-left 34-year-old political operative and daughter of the criminal masquerading as a judge, has a firm called Authentic Campaigns, which has received tens of millions of bucks of bribes, or donations, from Democrats wanting to take down the elected president that they fear they won't be able to prevent from managing to occupy the Oval Office again. Marchon now says, according to CNN, he is denying the motion for recusal. Gee, there's a shocker. Says he won't even bother to consider it again until the appellate court rules. And isn't it funny? Why didn't he just tell us what the appellate court's going to rule? You can rest assured they all know. And here's another tidbit in the joke pile, this time from the Daily Mail. The so-called judge in the hush money trial of the elected president has now sensationally allowed prosecutors to pretty much introduce any evidence they want, including the evidence of an alleged affair with Playboy model Karen McDougal, but not claims that it actually happened while his wife Melania was pregnant with son Barron. Marchon said prosecutors could bring any evidence they wanted, including that Trump's campaign coordinated with the National Enquirer. It's only a crime, folks, when Republicans do that, to suppress the McDougal allegations before the 2016 almost, but not well enough, rigged election. And the ruling kicked off a dramatic start, says the piece, to jury selection. What a joke. In the historic trial, as Marchon wouldn't even say whether Trump would be allowed to miss court next month to attend the graduation of his 18-year-old son, Barron, from high school. Back then to Martin Armstrong, who writes that Bragg, who's called Trump a rich white guy, is even introducing racism to this event, in addition to Bragg being a zealot Democrat. Of course, remember, racism only works in one direction, kind of like a one-way street. Nobody will ever address that issue. But New York is notorious for corruption in its legal system. And lawyers that I know, writes Martin Armstrong, will privately say New York, and everyone is aware of it, practices law differently than any other place in the country. In fact, their reputation for corruption is indeed historic. And here I'll skip over some of the stuff you've probably heard before, folks. But it dates all the way back to the infamous Boss Tweed a century ago. And as Armstrong concludes, it's still all about desperately trying to prevent Trump from becoming president so they can continue the agenda of wiping out farmers for non-existent climate change and starting World War III ASAP, so much for the land of the free and justice for all. Instead, he says, we're witnessing the total destruction of the United States, and they are deliberately trying to divide the country so that it will be impossible for the United States to remain a single nation, especially not one nation under God. And remember, this is only the first of four so-called criminal trials seeking to destroy any remaining integrity at this point, and that's pretty slim, for the 2024 election, which in itself is intended to be yet another crime. All of these trials are sponsored by the Biden-Fuhrer regime because he's their perfect president, absent 40% of the time, and getting three-letter agencies to do whatever bidding they want to on behalf of their deep state masters. They've literally torn the Constitution, he said, to shreds, and those who hate Trump are such fools that they've allowed the rule of law and politics to be altered forever. Again, he knows, why would anyone run for president knowing that the establishment can literally destroy you criminally or any other way they choose? Our computer, he writes, has projected that the United States will simply no longer exist after about 2032, maybe prior to that. As with all major empires, they have fallen by their own hand in what should be called suicide. And that's what we're witnessing here and now. Bragg, says Martin Armstrong, is seeking to imprison Trump with various felony counts of falsifying records to, quote, conceal criminal activity, including attempts to violate state and federal election laws. Are you ready for this? In order to influence the 2016 election. Says Armstrong, our computer correctly forecasted that Trump would win the 2016 election, and three different models projected that win. The fourth was at best an even tie, but what all of these charges and models show is that any claims of manipulation were total nonsense, as if paying money to this prostitute changed the election in any way, shape, or form. On the other hand, folks, hiding things like the Biden laptop in the most recent election arguably is a far more serious crime, and of course, a whole hell of a lot more likely to not only influence an election, but allow a stolen election to be covered up. I guess if you're the deep state, it's just really great to have a whole bunch of judges on your payroll. Concludes Martin Armstrong, the entire world will be watching this trial, and if Trump takes the stand, it may end up being the most watched trial in history. An acquittal in New York City, of course, is darn near impossible, highly unlikely is how he puts it, because they'd never put him on trial if there were any chance that the truth might come out, much less that he would be allowed to win. That would seal his presidency. So this is a high-stakes game where the entire world will now get to see, whether the deep state likes it or not, they have greased the skids here, that the United States and the concept of liberty and justice for all is complete and total, and I'm just going to say it the way he wrote it, bullshit. With a whole bunch of exclamation points. Oh yeah, and by Friday, folks, three of these so-called jurors, already seated, mind you, had been dismissed for various reasons that expose the degree of perfidy that's going on here. One, because a criminal history as a leftist got out. Oops, guess they lied about that or covered it up. Another for the really obvious reason that she was afraid that if she actually voted her conscience and voted to, based on the evidence, acquit Trump of a non-crime, her remaining lifespan in New York might be measured in hours. Once Antifa and Black Lives Matter got her sent. Because just maybe she'd already seen enough to make her not trust the New York DA. But it was a potential juror who was excused for having a brain that might have been the funniest of all. She not only revealed the bogus questions they were being asked and how that plays into the scam, she also indicated that while she wasn't a fan of President Trump, come on, she essentially said, we all have prior opinions on the defendant unless you've been living in a cardboard box. Really, folks, think about it. The guy was president of the United States, and anybody that can't see that and didn't recognize that probably doesn't have the brains to sit on a jury at all. Well, wait a minute. Unless you're in New York City. But speaking of which, that leads me to this. After a gaffe-filled laugh fest in Pennsylvania this week, the man masquerading as president, who demonstrated again that he doesn't have the brain power to be president of the Old Folks Association at an assisted living facility, showed us again why American leadership has become the laughingstock of the entire world. When he wasn't lying outright about cannibals eating his uncle, he trotted out idiocy like this. But honestly, this is probably as close to the truth as the guy ever gets. Just listen carefully.
Are you ready to choose freedom over democracy? Because that's America.
Yes.
Say what? Did he just come right out and admit it? It almost sounds like he's forgotten that he's not supposed to admit what form of government we were actually supposed to have. Democracy, or even demonocracy, is, as the founders put it, the devil's own government. Or as Ben Franklin so aptly put it, two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner. Which is why Franklin reminded us, we have a republic, if you can keep it. Well, obviously we didn't, but still, it was never democracy. Every regular listener or anybody who's ever read the Constitution or Bill of Rights or, for that matter, the Federalist Papers knows that. But among all the gaffes and walking into walls, did the Biden-Fuhrer actually just come out and admit the truth that we have a choice between freedom and democracy and we'd better choose freedom? Let's hear it one more time.
Are you ready to choose freedom over democracy? Because that's America.
Yes.
Somehow, I don't think the people that were cheering there actually understood what the Marionette on stage just told them outright. Well, folks, there's still more we could have talked about, like gun-free killing zone Australia, now realizing the hard way that defenseless people can't handle knives in their guts either, and green neo-Nazi Germany, where the real threat is that not only is climate insanity going to make sure that you freeze and starve, you're not even going to be able to drive your car on the weekend, all of which leads your host to close with a question. Just how much more do you need to see before you realize exactly what's going on and that if you're still alive, they obviously haven't finished with you yet? So what does that mean as we approach a climax of liberty versus tyranny and, yep, even life versus death?